Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see.
Taryn's update
for Survivor.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Survivor update for episode 11 of Winners at War. I'm your host, Trent Armstrong, and with me today is Ovi. How you doing, Ovi?
Pretty good. Happy to be here, Taryn. Thanks for having me today.
Yes, Ovi, who was on Big Brother 21 and very recently came in fourth place on the Big Brother Sequester game.
Yes, that was the fun journey. Sequester was more fun than my Big Brother journey, to clarify there.
Yes, also a Survivor fan, correct? How long have you been watching Survivor?
I've been a big Survivor fan for, Lord knows, probably last 10 years about. Yeah, I started watching like right when I, 9 years, when I got into high school. I was taking a class, and that was the assignment to watch Survivor. And from there, I became a big fan. I applied for the show. It didn't work out. Then Big Brother worked out instead.
There you go. Are there any winners that you hadn't seen their seasons?
I think the one I didn't see was Sophie's. I didn't see Sophie's win. I think she was one of the few that I was planning to watch right before the whole Winners at War. But I just didn't get the chance to. But most of the winners I did get a chance to win or watch.
Are you now very interested in seeing Sophie's season?
Oh, 100%. 100%. We'll talk about her later this episode. I have a lot of love for her.
All right. Well, we're going to go into this episode. We're doing a deep dive. We're going to go through all the details. And I've got to say, right off the top, this has to be one of my favorite episodes of Survivor ever. This was so much fun, especially going back on the rewatch. Mm-hmm. Literally, there was no wasted time. Every single segment of the show was interesting and compelling and worthy of me writing. I feel like I have literally like the entire script of the episode written down in my notes at this
point.
100%. So good. And I'm so happy to be talking it over with you, Ovi.
Yeah, I'm super excited to go into this deep dive. Taryn, if you can just give me 10 seconds, I just need to unlock the door for my dog right now because he's, one second.
I'm very excited about this episode. I feel like it really captured the essence of what Survivor is for me, especially in contrast with the previous episode where the family visit stuff was nice, but we got so little strategy in the previous episode. Being able to really understand what was going on in this episode was really, really good. So let's get into it, Ovi. Let's get into the episode. Before we get into the episode, though, Right. Briefly before, I have some quotes from earlier in the season that I feel like are relevant for this episode. The main quote here, Tony says in episode one, I want to get everyone nice and comfortable with me because their guards are right here right now. And they're slowly coming down as they see Tony's around camp all day, all mm-hmm. night. It's coming down. It's coming down like this. And when it gets to here, bang. That's when the sucker punch comes in. He's very prophetic, this Tony.
Yes, Tony gave me everything that I've wanted from him this whole season in just one. And I mean, I think he broke the confessional record. I might be wrong on that one, but there were so many confessions he had. I was worried he was going home for a second.
Right. Yes, 18 confessionals in one episode, yeah. Which is more than any other single player in any other episode of Survivor ever, including finales, which is a remarkable feat. Mm-hmm. I almost want to check the work on those 18 confessionals. I don't know if they fit that many in one episode. From episode, I believe this is episode two, maybe it was episode three, we get Tony and Sarah creating Cops Are Us 2.0. Tony says to us, the first time in Cagayan, it didn't work out so well for Sarah. It worked out for me, the Cops Are Us Alliance, which just included me because Sarah was voted off. But this time, I'm going to make it up to her if she gives me that trust.
And he did her dirty. He did her dirty.
Sarah says, the last time Cops Are Us happened, the other half of Cops Are Us voted this half of Cops Are Us out of the game. I didn't know how Tony operates. It was like we were brand new partners out on the street. Now I know my partner, and as long as nobody knows about Cops Are Us can work.
I don't know how well it worked, but it was fun to see. It was, I think... I won't get too much into it right now, but I'm excited for the beginning of next episode as well.
Mm. Yeah, and I think I think this quote from Sarah really represents how, like, what Tony has done to this point. They all came into the game thinking, I know Tony's game. It's not mm-hmm. going to work on me. And that's exactly what he talked about. Their guard just lowered and lowered, and he sucker punched them. And so a few other things that we saw Tony and Nick together here. We talked about this briefly in previous podcasts as well, that in episode 9, we saw that it was Tony doing a lot of the damage control with Nick after the Wendell blindside. That seemed to have been very useful for Tony in the following episode when seemingly Nick was all of a sudden with Tony and Sophie and all of them and not with Michelle. I think Tony has done a lot of work with Nick that we haven't really seen. He also is the one in a montage to keep Nick in the loop to rat out Tyson to Nick, saying that Tyson is the one that told Sarah that the vote is going on her. Tony doing a lot of work here with Nick. And then the tension between Tony and Sarah seemingly started in the last episode when he wanted Tyson out and she wanted Kim out. Obviously we've seen a lot of the stuff between Sophie and Sarah and how they need to be broken up because they're too close. There was a lot that went, there's this episode, like, I feel like every once in a while the editors put together an episode that is a culmination of a lot of the threads that they've woven throughout the previous episodes. And this is definitely one of them.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think there was a lot of foreshadowing we didn't even realize to lead up to this episode. And, yeah, to that point with Nick, I wish they showed a little bit more of the relationship between Nick and Tony so we could kind of get more of a grasp whether, you know, Nick just was like, oh, I'll jump in or not. Because I think there's a little more thought in there. Fortunately, Nick and I are pretty close friends because he lives an hour away from me. So he's actually one of the few, like, Survivor fans that keep up with closely. And so we were chatting after the episode. He's like, yeah, there was a lot more conversation that happened to go with that. So I really wish they showed that.
Yeah. How's he do? I heard he deactivated his Twitter.
Yeah, I think he's doing pretty good. I think that sometimes, you know, he just wants to chill. He's playing, what's the game? Catan. He does that on his live stream. So he's living life. But I think, you know, sometimes people send tweets here and there. But overall, I think he's good. I think he's getting a break.
I'm glad you're here because I do want to talk about Nick's game and I feel like he isn't getting a lot of credit for what he's doing and I definitely want to talk about it. All right, so we get into the episode. We open up and it's just Jeremy alone at camp because he bounced early. So how do we think this worked though? Like, cause they like boat them off back to the island, right? It's not, maybe there's not a boat ride for this one. I don't know, but did they just boat Jeremy back, on his own? Or did they boat everybody back and then say, Jeremy, you go first. And then everyone's okay. I don't know.
I really don't know. I mean, like, thinking it logically, what they most likely did, they just took him out tribal and then they put them all on the same boat and said, no one talk and you go there. But I think it'd be really funny if they like had him wait for everybody and they're like, all right, Jeremy, you go by yourself on the boat. Like, I like to think that's what happened.
Yeah, we'll never know. But So he's alone at camp. He says that he was not leaving this game with an advantage in his pocket, which foreshadowing for later. But he says that he was like, I said, I'm out of here. Like flash in the night. Boom. like a Houdini trick. I just poof and I'm gone. And he has this big grin on his face. You know, it was beautiful. It was beautiful.
It was so great. And it was so great, like, in the beginning of it, like, how everyone is so upset at him. Like, how could you do that, Jeremy? Like, why would you do, like, y'all were about to vote him out. Like, seeing Ben be so upset at Jeremy, because Jeremy just saved himself. It felt so good, you know? And I'm really glad Jeremy kind of tried calling out Ben there, and Ben was like, no, you're a bigger, like, it was gold. Like, Ben has been gold on the TV for me.
Yes. So he sees that Tyson is back on the edge. He says, this is not good. And this is when they all come, you know, funneling back in and they are, they're like, why'd you leave? Why'd you do that? Pull me out, no? And so Ben tells us, all right, we had a tight plan going into tribal. Myself, Nick, Sophie, Sarah, and Tony were all gunning for Jeremy, but Jeremy left tribal. And so we had to come up with a new plan. And so I was trying to figure this out last week. What happened here, Ovi? Why Michelle voted Tyson out and why they split the vote with only two votes on Denise. And apparently, like, one of the options was Michelle was secretly with them the whole time. But apparently that's not the case. Apparently Michelle really was left out of the vote, really was on the other side of things. Which means that why did she vote for Tyson? It doesn't make a lot of sense. We talked over those options, but my guess is that ultimately, if you listen to last week's podcast, I guess that the answer is she panicked. She voted for Tyson. I heard that Nick might have said that he told her to vote for Tyson. I don't know if that's true.
I didn't hear much about that yet. But I'll ask him that, actually. I didn't know that. I was wondering.
Maybe
that
Sarah. Hold on. Maybe I think he said that Sarah told her to vote for Tyson. I think that's what he said. Somebody told her to vote for Tyson. But like, but here's the thing. If they tell Michelle to vote for Tyson, Michelle votes for Tyson, then why isn't Michelle telling Kim, they told me to vote for Tyson? And if we put three votes on somebody else, maybe because she thinks that she might be the other vote, so she's voting Tyson. I don't know. I wish we got a confessional from Michelle that explained it. But anyway, apparently Michelle was not on the vote, so we can put a little bit of that to rest for now.
That's interesting. I do wish to that point, you know, I love the editing style of the season where sometimes they kind of not just blindside the players, but blindside us in certain ways. But I do wish afterwards that maybe the, you know, preceding episode, we would kind of get another confessional, be like, well, this is kind of what went through my mind because of that vote. That would be just to answer some questions for us.
Yeah, we need flashbacks. Ben tells us that Jeremy is public enemy number one now, and this is an actual group of five that can move forward and he can control the game with. And he thinks that the move forward from here is to take out their biggest threat, which is Jeremy. And so then we get this confrontation between Jeremy and Ben, where Jeremy's asking Ben, like, so Tyson, do you think Tyson leaving was best for your game, man? Like, who's the biggest target left in the game now? And Ben's just like, you. Jeremy's like, you won immunities, you played advantages. Jeremy's like, whoa, I don't think everyone's gonna be looking at me like I'm the guy. Listen, you gotta listen to me, Ben. And he's like, I don't have to listen to you, Jeremy. And in my eyes, you're a lot bigger of a threat than I am.
I never thought that the rivalry that I enjoy so much is like everyone versus Ben, you know, Adam versus Ben, Jeremy versus Ben. Like it's been funny to see that. And I wish there was a little more context too, because going on, it seems Jeremy was really upset about between him and Ben. Like that was, and we saw a lot of confessionals why Jeremy was talking about Ben saying there's no way he's going to vote for me, or like, no way he's not going to vote for me, things like that. So I don't know. I wonder if there was a little more tension there. And Jeremy was talking about also later on in the episode how everything annoyed him about Ben. Like, and Ben could do anything. He could just breathe and it would annoy him.
Well, I mean, we saw that Jeremy was working pretty closely with Tony and Ben. They were in the sort of like big threats crew. They were the bros. And so I think that Jeremy is feeling like you stabbed me in the back, man. And yeah, so Tony is trying to pretend that I wasn't in on that. Whereas Ben is just like, yeah, dude, you're the biggest threat, man. Like, what do you want me to do? I'm not really a big threat. I know I was pretending to be, but I'm not an idiot. I'm Ben. Jeremy tells us Tyson was the biggest shield around. He wanted Tyson as his meat shield. That's his system. That's how he wins the game. Mm-hmm. But now he's not here. So it's not good. So we get a little bit from Kim and Michelle. Kim tells Michelle, I got played hard. It's not good. Michelle says that, she can't tell what's real and what's fake. There's so many levels of chaos that, and she just can't play the game like that. She's just very confused.
Yeah. No, it's a roller coaster watching Michelle in there. She plays great in a lot of moments. And then she's on top and then you find her fine on the bottom. So, but I almost like watching Michelle trying to claw her way and figure things out as it goes. And I think it's interesting to see in the middle where a lot of people, even though there is supposed to be a tight five now or four, they were not sure what's going on, or they felt so sure they didn't want to talk to it with the other players.
Mm. Yeah, Michelle tells us that when you're left out of a vote and nobody seems to trust you, you're probably at the bottom. Yeah. I don't trust anybody. And Kim says, you, me, Jeremy, and Denise are screwed. We're just screwed. So then we get to the next morning. Tony is up early. He says, at the beginning of the season, I couldn't go look for idols. I had to stay at camp all the time. And look what happened. I'm still in the game. I've been patient. Everyone is always tired after tribal. They sleep like logs. Now's the time for me to go to work. And so this is actually like a thing with Tony that he talked about a lot in his first season, which was that he doesn't sleep a lot. He would spend all night thinking through scenarios while everyone else slept. So not super surprising that he's the guy that's able to get up at the crack of dawn and beat everyone else to go find an idol.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's kind of fun watching this season with my girlfriend Hannah, because this is actually her first Survivor season. Ooh. And so she never got to see any of these winners before. And I've always tried to get her into this, you know, show, but she just wasn't really much for it. And so she's watching and she just looks at me and is like, are you sure Tony won a season? Like, how did he win a season playing like this? And like, that's what's so amazing about Tony. And so, but she's a huge Tony fan now. I think that's the person she wants to see win it next to Nick. We kind of got to see prime Tony, what we've been waiting for, because, you know, his first season, he played, you know, the most flamboyant game, erratic, but still found himself at the end. And then he came back again. And that, you know, run was done short. So I think, if anything, that helped his danger level at all in this season.
Yeah. We get a great scene now. There was a very funny montage earlier in the season of Nick just kind of sliding into frame. And so we get another iteration of that where Tony is searching for an idol and the camera pans over and Nick's just
there.
Yeah. And so Tony's like, Nick is cramping my style. He directs him to the water well. He's like, oh, I haven't searched the water well yet. You go search at the water well, I'll go search over here. They promised to be transparent with one another, which I doubt they were, considering that we didn't get Tony telling Nick about the idol.
Yeah.
And so they go and they look in separate directions, and then Tony finds an idol. If you were around for Cagayan and you were Rob as a podcast listener, you know all about how Tony finds idols. Ooh, baby, I needed this. We get a great reaction. Yo, No way. Please. Yes.
It's Christmas morning for him. It's literally like it's a ringtone for any Survivor fan having Tony Fine and I, honestly.
Yeah. It was huge. He needed it and he got it. So he's so excited. Tony, he has so much enthusiasm for the game.
But can I also say it was, I don't know, maybe it was just the angle we were getting shot at, but it was so obvious. I felt that it's a huge tree. There's a random rock next to like on the tree. Like there's going to be something like, I was like, there's going to be an idol there. I mean, the editing showed, but I don't know. I wonder how. Did he have to move things away, or was it that obvious that, you know, the rock's there and I don't know.
Well, it was really dark. Like you could tell that it was like he was kind of just like, I think even when he removed the rock, he still didn't see it. He was just kind of
that's
like,
true. It was
like,
okay,
swiping
his
hand through the leaves, and then it like came up with an idol. He's like, whoa.
That is true. It was dark. Yeah. It was early morning that he went.
Mm. Yeah. So we cut from Tony finding an idol to Sarah, who is holding a fashion show. She says, this is not even a confessional. This is just her just like doing stuff at camp. She's like, you know, a lot of people think I'm just smart and funny and pretty, but I'm also really creative and I can make clothes.
I love this part because it made me laugh so much because just someone's, you know, and again, this is all love to Sarah, but she's like, some people think I'm just smart, pretty, and funny. Like, I'd be happy to have any three of those qualities. But I'm also creative. I'm also creative. Like, not just a trifecta, but all four.
I've got to say, I feel like we don't often get humor from Sarah. This is my brand of humor. I love the sarcasm.
Yeah.
I thought this was really funny. She says, this is what I've been up to this morning. I've started my own clothing line. She's just talking about a complete straight face. And then we get this montage of like a fashion show, which was shot really well, I've got to say, it just like follows them from behind. This is a really great segment.
Yeah.
You know, they even kick in with the music.
No, it was great. I love like the little, like the twirl they're walking down there. It was perfect. All I wanted was Tony to be part of it too.
Well, Tony didn't want to be part of it.
He did not.
Who won the fashion show? Who had the best outfit, Ovi?
Michelle killed it with her walk. She just did that little strut through the jacket. She's done this before, it looked like. It was solid. It was solid. I wish we needed. Oh, go on.
I did like Sarah's thing that she had going on. It's some sort of like clear wrap that she had. I think Michelle had the best attitude in her walk.
She did. They all did great. But what has made me realize that we're so sorely missing from Survivor. We don't need Edge of Extinction. We need like Survivor's Next Model. So when you get voted out, actually, you go to Edge of Extinction. But Sarah makes all the clothes, and they do a whole runway.
What if here's an idea. What if the Edge of Extinction is actually just Project Runway, and so they show up on Edge of Extinction and Tim Gunn is there and he's like, all right guys,
it's
and
time.
The person who wins Project Runway makes their way back into the Survivor game.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think at that point Yule is a given, you know, if he's winning that right there.
Yes. All right. So Sarah uses this opportunity to say, you know, Tony doesn't want to participate in the fashion show. And that's why I love Tony to death. But we play two completely different ways. He wants a flashy game. He wants to play idols. He doesn't really play a social game. My social game is really great. And, you know, I think that there is a lot of validity in what she's saying. I think the fans often view things that way as well, where if somebody is playing a big flashy game with idols and stuff like that, they often don't think of that player as a social player. And they think of players who have these sort of camp life moments as the more social players. But I think that this episode is sort of a thesis statement on why that's not necessarily the case, that these kinds of players do not also have great social games.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think it, you know, with Tony, he is such, even as winners, he's such an anomaly. And I think, say about his social game, I think we just look at the token footage, the way he had to go to each person. I don't want to jump ahead, so I'll let you talk about that more, but how he had to go to each player and convince them to give him a token that could essentially get them back in the game if they were voted out.
Yeah. So we cut over to Tony, and he says, I want to do damage. I want to play the game. But there's no point in keeping Jeremy around, but I am going to go undercover. In real life, I don't get to go undercover. Real life is much more dangerous than Survivor. So I get to have fun on Survivor and go undercover there. This whole time, I'm just thinking about Derek, Levasseur, which was like, yeah. They both won their seasons very, very close to each other. Derek won on Big Brother. Derek actually was a guest on this podcast. It would have been interesting to see Derek's take on this. He goes and he tells Jeremy, he says, hey, Kim told me to vote Sophie. Tyson was saying to vote Denise. And I was blindsided. I was just confused. He's trying to pretend like he wasn't really with the other group, that it was just after Jeremy left. He was very confused and the votes were going somewhere. And so he says, I have to pretend I'm on his side. I'm really not. That's what he's trying to do here. He goes to Michelle. He says, Jeremy is my closest person in the game. Tony, he's playing double agent. He's going undercover.
Yeah, no, he is 100% going undercover. And the only person I think that was kind of on him, and maybe more people were than we saw, but Kim was the only person who was like, I think Tony's trying to play both ways. But I mean, Jeremy was convinced that he was on his side. Ben was convinced that he was on his side. So Tony was getting the best of both worlds at that point.
Yeah, we get a great interaction with Kim and Tony. It starts, Kim says to Tony, you wanted Sophie out? Like deadpan, like she doesn't believe it. Tony's, yes, what did you think I was going to do? She's, I think you're going to vote Jeremy. She stares straight at him. I think you're going to vote Jeremy. Stare, like turn and stare, like I'm reading your reaction. Love Kim. Tony's, oh my God, bro. No. She said, you tell me if I'm wrong. She said, You're wrong. I was not voting for Jeremy. I was with Jeremy. And then Tony says, he says to us, the only way I can blindside these guys is by continually pretending I'm on their side. And so he says to Kim, now I'm getting nervous because they might do something. They might try to do something to me. Kim's just like, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yeah, no, it's that. And here's a cool thing I think about the season, that we're so lucky to be able to watch these winners play, because in some seasons, Tony doing that, people might not be able, they might just believe him. They might just not say yes. But each of these players, whether you love them or hate them, they're all winners in their own respective seasons. So they come into this season right here with a special ability. They can see through BS, most of them, I'd say. They play the game hard, and they know when they're getting played many of the times. So I think in that moment, Kim has experience and knows Tony is trying to, you know, mister, and she's not buying it. So I think that was really cool. And you might see maybe a lesser player not be able to, you know, or might just be convinced by Tony at that point.
Yeah, Tony says he's having all the fun in Survivor Land. Jeremy lets Michelle know that he does want to work with Tony. They had a talk, and he was extremely believable. Tony was. Jeremy tells us that he feels good about their group of five, which is himself, Michelle, Kim, Denise, and Tony. Michelle agrees. She thinks, we're going to get through this. It's going to be okay. So Jeremy and Michelle are both on board with Tony, but Kim and Denise are not. Kim tells Denise, I think Tony's trying to play double agent, but it'll really be myself or Jeremy that he tries to get out. She tells us, Tony has this act going on. He's trying to salvage a relationship with Jeremy. I'm not supposed to know what Tony's doing, but I do know. And I think Tony is my biggest enemy out here right now.
Yeah, no, I think it's Denise had a smart guess on that. And I think it just speaks volumes that, you know, Jeremy should have been the most worrisome of who's on his side or not. But he was completely in on Tony. Like, he's like, Tony has our back 100%. And he was counting on that vote. I guess my question is, you think that if Denise and Kim, like, they believe Tony was with them, would they vote as a block? Would they have truly stayed with that block?
It's really interesting. And a part of me wonders, you know, Kim keeps saying things like, I'm not supposed to know this, but I do know this. I know this for sure. I wonder if Kim knows this because she's already been talking to Sophie and Sarah and talking about flipping over. And so when Tony is trying to pretend he's with Jeremy, she already knows that that's a plan that's been put in place. And she's just not telling Jeremy about it, because we don't ever see Kim talk to Jeremy saying Tony's not with you. So I wonder if she knew, partly because she read it, but also because she had the relationship with Sarah and Sophie and they told her. And I also wonder how much of that relationship that Kim and Denise had with Sarah and Sophie influenced his ultimate decision to flip back around to take Sophie out and side with Jeremy without Kim and Denise being on board. We'll get into it as we go to see if there's any validity to those theories. So we head over to the Edge of Extinction, and this is the way they put this together was so cool to me. Like this little sequence where they start with Tyson just talking like he's giving a lecture on Survivor or something, as they like have some, you know, music under it, and there's a montage, and we're just hearing Tyson say, you know, some mentalities can handle it and some can't. Can ruin people's lives to lose the game.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that go home and struggle with it for years. And it's like this super serious, insightful speech. And then he ends it with, for reals. And it cuts to, it's just him talking to Wendell.
Yeah.
And Wendell's just like, yeah. He's like, you gonna be okay, Wendell? I think so. Good. You're strong. Adam's gonna have a hard time.
And it's Adam walking up the beach.
Yeah,
poor no. Adam. Tyson got Adam voted out. Now he's saying he's gonna have a hard time.
But I mean that's why I love Tyson. He's a straight face, and then you just turn and Wendell's like, "Yeah, hopefully I'll be good. I'll be good." You know, I've been on this beach with my ex for like 30 days now, and I'm gonna get an extension. So,
yeah. I think this is a correct quote, though. I think that like Tyson is completely right when he talks about this. Like, it really does eat at people for a long time to go on a show like this and lose. And I think that they talked about it last night on the Know-It-Alls that like it's, I feel like especially for winners to go on and play who have never experienced losing, who are then gonna, you know, experience it for the first time. Like, it must have some sort of impact on your identity, because you have gone through life. You are a Survivor winner. You've never lost. And now you're a Survivor loser.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, on a serious note too, I think it's like type of, I think, reality TV show. When you come off it, you feel some sort of way, you know, and especially in today's day and age, like social media, there is like a pressure of like with the fans, how you perform. But also on this season too, I think it's, you know, it's weird because with Survivor is like the people on the season are watching it as it goes too. So they already know what's coming, but they don't know how the fan is going to react to an episode or react about them doing a certain move. So it's definitely a lot of pressure. And I think that on the island, they're also thinking about, man, like I went home right now, or like I went to this island and who knows what's going to happen, especially after I won my season. So it's tough mentally. I think it does a lot to them.
Yeah. I hope they can all remember that they're also Survivor winners, no matter what happens this season.
I mean, their bank accounts, most of them are pretty happy already. And I think that, you know, it's experience.
Ben is going to say later, you know, it's crazy how fast a million goes.
Yeah,
who knows what their bank accounts look like. Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors and we'll be right back.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. And we're back. So let's get back to the show. So Natalie's just going to randomly find a wine bottle on the beach with a clue in it. Parv was just like, did somebody just leave a bottle out? Wait, there's a clue in it?
No, that was a little strange. I don't know. I was wondering, it's like, did someone wave? I'm like, hey, y'all should talk over here. You know, like, what's going on? Right there, it's just like hand season. Like, it felt like an episode of Office. Like, you go and then camera's zooming right there, and there's just literally something there.
Yeah. So Probst says in his little recap thing that he does sometimes that they decided to, you know, give the clue out this way, that they put it somewhere on the beach that people go all the time, so that they knew someone would find it and it would be this cool little moment where they just kind of stumble upon a clue.
Okay.
So very notable here in the previous episode or the one before, whatever it was, Parvati and Danny had found the 50-50 coin advantage and they sold it to Michelle for 4 tokens. And so Parvati got 4 tokens from that. We know that she bought at least 1 jar of peanut butter. We saw that in the secret scene. However, in this confessional, the little lower third thing says Parvati, 0 tokens. So if that's correct and not just a mistake, she has somehow spent all 4 of her tokens and currently has no tokens left. I don't know what that means. If it means that peanut butter got a lot more expensive, or if it means that she bought 4 jars of peanut butter, or if it means that she gave 2 of her tokens to Danny since Danny was with her when she found it and then spent her other 2 on 2 jars of peanut butter, or maybe each jar of peanut butter was 2 tokens. I'm not sure exactly what it was. Somebody said she answered it in a tweet. What did she say? If she did, let me know, because I would love to know. But the point here is that she has no tokens left at this point. Who knows how many she gets from this. I think I'm seeing that she did give Danny 2 and then she bought 2 jars of peanut butter.
I'm reading that.
Okay.
Huh. You know, it's expensive. Peanut butter is expensive on that island. And as Tony said, that inflation happens with these survivor tokens.
Yeah. So
you've talked about this previously, but I absolutely love this concept of the fire tokens. I think they've added a different dimension to the game. And I think in a way it's added a different strategic element about like a bartering system, you know, and we put the survivor players put the value on these tokens because they can say how many they want and different things. So I would love to see this expanded. I love this episode, how it works. And I'll let you talk about it, but the extortion, this is probably my by far favorite part of this episode right here.
All right. Well, they figure out, the thing is under the bed. So they go and Parv distracts them. They go see the sunset. Natalie grabs the thing and it's an extortion advantage and it prevents somebody from playing in the immunity challenge and from voting in the next cycle if they don't meet the payment demands. And so Natalie's first thought was, OK, we have to think about either how many tokens we can get or how much damage we can do. And so this has definitely been a topic of conversation. How much could they have charged? I think theoretically they could have just said, give us 100 tokens and screwed somebody over who couldn't possibly fulfill the requirement. It doesn't seem like that was against the rules. At the very least, they could have said like 10, like something impossible. Just to screw up somebody in the game. I don't like love that, but I do. Do like the idea of this sort of like, you know, they can set their own price, and they can you know, put a penalty on people. I think that this kind of works in the game. It would have definitely come off a little differently if this ends up like screwing Tony and it's the reason why he lost, because he wasn't able to have enough fire tokens. Like, that would have been probably a bad look for the episode. Luckily though, Tony's able to pull this one through. And so I kind of hearken it to like Big Brother 8, where you know, you put a really good player in a really, really bad position. It can make good TV as long as they're able to persevere for a while. But if it doesn't work out, then it might not be as fun. So I'm still not entirely sure how I feel about it overall.
I think I love the concept of how they did this extortion. I think there might have been and I wonder if there was maybe like a suggestion, you know, maybe like, maybe you shouldn't go over 8. Maybe you shouldn't go over 6. You know, maybe this is they like telling him a little bit, like, this is a realistic number. I do wish that it either took out your ability to be in the competition, like compete in there, or your voting, not both. I think it was too powerful to be like, well, you can't be in this competition, you can't go for immunity, and you definitely can't vote. So I think I would have felt a little better about the portion if it was just one of them, like one or the other.
Yeah, and like, so for example, if these alliances had stayed the same and it was 5-4 and they extort Tony, he's unable to pay, it's now a 4-4 vote, and maybe they go to rocks? Like, this could have dramatically changed the outcome of the entire season if it takes out the right person at the right time. And I don't know how much influence we want to be able to give the these edge players with that sort of thing. But it works out in this episode, so it's okay.
Great TV. It was great TV when we, especially Tony's reaction when he gets that, you know, a little letter, and he's reading it line by line by line, and you can see his face. So wait, I'm getting extorted?
I want to say again, the editing in this episode is so fantastic. So many like funny little cuts. They say that, okay, Parvati says, we need to give it to somebody that's chaotic enough that would stop at nothing to get those tokens, to not sit out of a challenge, not sit out of a vote, that will then we'll get whatever price we want. And we just cut to a shot of Tony just kind of sitting there twiddling his thumbs. And then we get to a closer cut to his face, and then we cut to commercial. It's just a great moment.
Great. Here's a question, Terrence. So if you're in this position, all right, you're Tony, all right, you are right smack in the middle. Would this actually be a blessing in disguise, though? Because then you don't need to show your cards, because he's in that moment that four of them think he's going this side, the other four is on that side. This gives him an excuse to say, my hands are tied right now, there's nothing I can do. Or do you think the risk of him going out is too much to not take it?
I mean, that's exactly what I was thinking and tweeting at the time, was like, this is a great opportunity for Tony to just be like, oh, I was extorted from my vote. Sorry, guys, can't help out.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, the brilliance of Tony is that he goes beyond, I think, that first instinct that you, that somebody might have, and he takes it like 5 steps further. And ultimately I think he took it somewhere that I didn't predict, and that is ultimately, I think, better for his game than what he would have done otherwise. Although, you know, we'll ultimately find out as time goes on. But we'll talk about that as he makes that call. We have to first talk though about Evil Donathan Vampire.
Oh yes, was that Nick who Nick said that? Yeah,
Nick says he was called the evil Donathan Vampire on the internet after he won, and I've got to say, I've never heard that before until Nick said that.
I never saw that either. I was so confused for a second because I was like, wait, what? No, but I probably should change his contact name for that. And so when this whole quarantine is done, we hopefully can throw some sort of event for him and other people around here. I'm gonna put that in a huge banner just for him.
Yeah. He says, Michelle says, you know, you do have kind of vampire features.
Yeah.
And you look like Twilight. Hey, vampires are good looking, Nick.
They shine the light.
Yeah.
I think it was the first time Nick got a tan since his season. So it was good for him to be out in the sun for sure.
I feel like Nick fares very well with the island hot.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's funny. He was telling me, he might have tweeted about this. He's like, man, this is the first when I came off my season, because his season wasn't much. There wasn't as much time between his season and this newest season. And he was talking about when I came off my season, that's the first time my bank account had that many zeros in it. He's like, I ate as much food as I possibly could. So I didn't care about how I looked back on the island. He said, I'd lose this on the island. So I think we see that progression from, you know, Nick just happy, chilling, have a little dad bod. Now, I mean, he's island hot.
There you go. Then we get Tony is just sprinting through the jungle, just like jumps down into the ground, collapses, and he's so excited. Oh my God, I found something. It's in my bag. I saw it. I just ran right over here. Oh my God. Okay, let me open it up. Oh my God, first word I read is extortion. This is great. In real life, I can't do this, but I watch it in the movies and it looks so fun. He's got like mobsters, they extort people and they're like, I'm going to break your legs. Oh man, this is so exciting. And he's reading it through and he's like, okay, so you extort, so they can't compete in immunity. They can't vote. This is illegal, man. Oh man, this is so, this advantage is being played against you. He drops the note. His face just drops visibly. The demand is 6 fire tokens.
This should be illegal.
I'll tell you what, man. If this is in real life, you're doing some prison time. This is extortion. Code 2C something. I don't know. It's a criminal code. Extortion is illegal in the States. I don't know why it's not illegal here in Fiji. This is ludicrous. I've got 3 tokens. They want 6?
Oh, it's so funny. And I, you know, maybe it's the recency bias, but I really think this scene right here is going to go down in those highlights, the Survivor highlights, when we talk about like most funny moments. I couldn't stop laughing. Like having his face go from like so excited. I love how he has to put like that disclaimer, like, I wouldn't do this in real life. I'm a cop, you know, don't worry, this is not really good. But in the game, break bones, break knees, let's extort somebody. Like, it was just so funny. So funny.
Yeah, I did look it up, actually. He is correct. The criminal code for extortion is 2C20-5. he knows his stuff.
He knows his laws. Good for him.
So in Jeff's little recap thing, he talked about this this note in particular, and he said that when they were writing the note, they were all laughing, knowing that the key line is at the bottom, and so they were very much doing this on purpose to get someone excited. And he said that Tony reading that note was one of his favorite moments of the season.
Oh, it was so funny. And I try to go down my head, like, who's left in there that would have had kind of a reaction that would have given us the same goal. But I think Tony, you couldn't be his reaction. You really couldn't.
Mm. So Tony says, not only are they extorting me, I'm on a time limit. I've got to get these tokens. His first thought, he's going to approach his fake alliance for tokens and say they need to help him so that he can help them with the vote. And so he goes to Michelle and asks her for some tokens. And so Michelle smart. Tells us, oh, crap. I have 0 tokens because I spent them on my 50-50 coin. Mm-hmm. I want to give him tokens, but I can't. So she has to spin this story about having an advantage for the challenge on extinction. Now, I've seen some people say, what a great lie that Michelle came up with, because it discourages them from voting her out because, you know, she's got this advantage for the challenge. I actually have a slightly different perspective on this. Now, obviously, if she's making this lie up on the spot, you know, congrats for making up a lie that doesn't put you in immediate danger right now and, you know, all of that. But I do disagree with the notion that this discourages people from voting her out, because if she has an advantage for the challenge to get back in from extinction, that actually encourages people to vote her out so that she beats all of the other challenge beasts, mm-hmm. like Tyson and Rob and whoever, from coming back in. because those are the more dangerous people, because the last thing you want is somebody like Tyson coming in at final six or whatever, and then winning just two immunity challenges, a fire making, and all of a sudden Tyson's won the game. So if I'm sitting there on the island, I'm thinking, well, Michelle has this advantage to get back into the game. Let me vote out Michelle so that she comes back into the game. I am going to have an easier time beating her at these final immunity challenges.
Yeah, no, I didn't really think about that as much in that way, but I think that's a good point. I think that would only hurt her, though, more so. And I'm interested to be back maybe at, the final seven, final eight, because no one would still want to vote her off. Like, they would be, I think, the worry to vote her off now just in case you get voted off to compete against Michelle. But I could easily see, you know, maybe someone bringing that back up in, like, seven, or if that's a conversation they might not show that, wait, we heard Michelle has this. Let's get her out so she can come back. And we don't have a chance of going to the island now at this point. So
yes. And I do want to believe, I don't think that it will impact the game in that direction.
Yeah.
As a counterpoint to, I think, some of the things that I was reading, I think that this could go either way, depending on how the players are thinking about it. But overall, you know, good that she is not admitting to having an advantage that is played in the game. It seems like nobody's doubting this. I don't know if, you know, she's telling anybody else this as well. But Tony just says, man, the price of milk just went up. She's got an advantage. She got an advantage for 4 tokens. We've got some major inflation going on.
It's so funny. So funny. Yeah. But I think, you know, it's crazy that Tony almost used this in a sense to his advantage. He got more information, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking that no one really went around asking anybody, like, how many tokens do you have left? That's not been a conversation, at least from what we've seen. And correct me if I'm wrong, Taryn, but no one's been, we haven't seen any scenes where, like, someone's like, wait, how many tokens do you have? Or how many? So this kind of starts that people kind of prodding and maybe using other excuses to figure out how many tokens someone might have, actually.
Yeah, and there's sort of a classic sort of, I don't know what you'd call it, but thing that says that when you ask someone for a favor, it actually gets them to like you. If somebody does you a favor, that makes them like you even more. Seemingly, it would make you like them more, but actually it makes them like you more, because in their mind, I just did something for this person. I must have done it for a good reason. So it actually makes people like you more. And I do wonder how much of that is going to benefit Tony by them giving him things. Now, obviously, I think it could backfire even more if he then stabs him in the back. And this is why I was a little like, oh, you're going to the group that you're planning to betray and you're asking them for tokens. And then if they give you tokens so that you can vote and then you vote against them, they're going to be so mad at you, Tony. I was worried about this. Michelle says, OK, Jeremy has tokens. I'll go ask him. Give me the note. I'll go talk to Jeremy. And he's like, OK. She goes to Jeremy and she says, he's not going to be able to vote with us at tribal unless he pays six tokens, which is worst case scenario for us, Jeremy. And Jeremy just laughs in dismay. Like, nothing can go right for me this season. Poor Jeremy.
Yeah. Though it's funny that it, you know, it felt like that. And I wonder, like, Jeremy being in that position where he felt like he has to give it to him because probably Tony can't trust him. If he does it, maybe. But do you think Jeremy giving him his token, which he ultimately decides to do, do you think that instills trust in Tony? Be like, wait, you know what? I might want to keep you. So maybe in another world, if Jeremy's like, I can't give you one, makes up an excuse, do you think Tony votes him out instead?
I think that the fact that Jeremy gives Tony a token proves that Jeremy trusts Tony. And I have a feeling that Tony's going to feel a lot less comfortable switching up this vote if he doesn't have that confirmation that Jeremy believes him. I absolutely think this, again, like, I think it helped bond them together a little more, which was very essential for the coming vote. Jeremy tells us, trust is huge out here. Tony trusts me, and I want him to know as much as he needs. I need him as much as he needs me. I want him to know that. It's very important that he knew that. So I'm going to give him one. I could give him my other one, but then I'd have zero, and I don't want to have zero. So Jeremy approaches Tony and he says, I have a plan. I'm going to give you one. And then he gets cut off by Tony's confessional. I really want to know what Jeremy's plan was, because I doubt it was go to Nick and Ben. Jeremy seemed to have some kind of plan for Tony to get the others that we just never heard. And I'm very interested in knowing what this plan was.
Yeah, no, I wonder what it was. But maybe do you think he would have been trying to say, why don't you try to convince Ben to give you one? Because at that point, Tony or Jeremy wants to still vote out Ben. So do you think might have been Jeremy?
You'd think that Jeremy's plan, my assumption is I'll give you one. And here's the thing. I have a plan. Denise has three and Kim has two. So Denise can give you two, or Denise and Kim both can give you one. Like somehow we can definitely get up to three here, Tony. But whatever it was, we don't hear it. Tony just says to us that he's now thinking he has to go to his real alliance to get the other tokens here. So he approaches Nick, and Nick says, I can give you one. He approaches Ben. And Ben also says, okay, I will pay you one. Tony says, I'll pay you back. I'll pay you back, yeah. Ben.
Ben probably the least happy actually to do it, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ben only has one token. Ben is the only person here.
Okay,
gives up his only token for Tony in this moment. Ben is the only person in the game. Ben and Sarah only had one token each. And Ben gives up his only token to Tony here. Tony says, I'm loaded. I am wealthy.
Yeah.
This is my official payment for that disgusting advantage somebody sent me. I will be voting tonight.
Do you think he doesn't? I wonder if he asked Sarah, actually. Do you think he's right to ask Sarah to, it would bring up suspicion where, like, why do you actually need this? Because we're good on the vote. Or does she, you know, I'm curious
on
that one.
This is something I'm super curious about, because after the fact, when you look back at the people he chose to ask for tokens, it makes you wonder, why didn't he ask Sophie for tokens? Sophie has two. Sophie's in his group of five. They need Tony's vote. Probably, maybe they don't feel like they need Tony's vote because they already feel like they have Kim and Denise. So he doesn't go to Kim. He doesn't go to Denise. Tony seemingly already knows that those two are gone. We were presented this like Kim and Denise. They flipped after the immunity challenge. I really feel like Kim and Denise flipped as soon as they got back from the previous tribal. Mm-hmm. I think they were never back with Jeremy. I think that's why they knew Tony was playing Jeremy, and they just didn't tell Jeremy about it. And I think that Tony knew that they were playing on that side, and that's why he never went to Kim or Denise to try and get their tokens. Again, Denise has three tokens, and everybody knows about these tokens. So she seems like a no-brainer to go to if Tony thinks that this is a group that is still together at all. And he does not go to Sarah. He does not go to Sophie, which is very interesting considering that Sarah, at the very least, is seemingly his number one. She only has one token, but surely, you know, she's the person most likely to give him token. The people he ends up going to are the people he ends up voting with, apart from Ben, in the following tribal council. He goes to Michelle, Jeremy, then Nick, and then to get the final one, because those are all three of the people that he plans to vote with that night. The final one comes from somebody else. Ben, who's the person who's, I guess, most likely to give him one or whatever it is. But it almost seems like Tony was already thinking, I'm planning to do this at this point.
Yeah. No, that could be true. And maybe he went to the people. For him, it might have been a test to figure out wants to continue working towards if he wants to do it. I mean, that's five people there. And he got his tokens with those people he asked already. Unless it wasn't shown that he talked to anybody else, but maybe that was kind of an indicator, and I'm curious to see, because Ben gave him one, maybe he's going to try to build a bridge between Jeremy and Ben down the line again.
Yeah, super, super interesting. I can't wait to listen to the post-game interviews so we can find out exactly what's going on in all of these situations.
And the cool thing is, too, I feel like we haven't had this type of interaction before on Survivor, and this kind of I need this from you. I need this from you, because we've never had an element like fire tokens introduced. And this is kind of what I was hoping for when these were first introduced, that it wouldn't just be some sort of gimmick, you know, that you need use it as a barter system to buy peanut butter, things like that, which it is. But to this element where it's used as a trust factor. Like, there is a tangible thing that you can show your trust other than immuting the idol, you know? And that's a fire token now.
Yeah, and that's the part of this episode and the part of this twist that I loved. I loved having this kind of currency in the game. I do think there are potential pitfalls for this extortion advantage. Mm-hmm. But what we saw, the end result was fantastic. I think if there's a way to incorporate the end result in a way that doesn't have the potential pitfalls, I think we've got something really good here. And this was great stuff. Tony having to pull together tokens in order to make something happen. You know, either he had this planned ahead of time, or maybe the people that gave him the tokens also gave him the idea of, I can get these people together to vote. Whatever it was, we're ultimately going to see something very special occur from this. But first, we have to go to the immunity challenge, which Tony can compete in because he now has those tokens. And this is, they're standing on a little balance beam. They're holding a thing up with the pole. It lasts for more than 32 minutes, which is apparently, Jeff says, longer than they've ever done this challenge. And it comes down to Ben, Jeremy, and Tony. Ben drops out, Jeremy drops right after, and Denise is like, what the hell? And Kim looks upset, yeah. but that's because Tony has won immunity, and with that comes two tokens, and Jeff puts the necklace around his neck, and he says, second time in a row, go from nothing to dominating, and Tony's like, don't say that, man.
Don't say that. Yeah, no, this was a cool, hats off to all of them, because I can't imagine going so many days on that island right there. What is it? Are they 3 weeks in yet on that island? And they're having to do such a 32 minutes. Your arms are burning. And so for them to hold it that long, that's crazy. But I wonder too, in that situation, Tony didn't even have a chance, because he went from 3-2 then 1 automatically. Like, Jeremy mm-hmm. dropped right after, was it Nick dropped or was it Ben? Who was the third person?
Ben dropped, but, and then Jeremy dropped right after.
Ben dropped. Okay. So I wonder what's the situation if Jeremy holds it and Tony is seeing Jeremy. Does Tony think, like, maybe I should drop it, or does he just keep fighting for it, you know? Or does that cause a little animosity between both, like, you know?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of people in the chat.
At that point, I wonder if his alliance thinks, like, Tony, what?
Yeah, sorry, you're a little bit choppy with the internet. I think we stumbled over each other a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all good. So a lot of people have been saying in the chat, I've seen some people say it on the internet, that people feel like Jeremy might have thrown this immunity challenge. It kind of looked like he did. He kind of steps off. I'm with Steven from the Know-It-Alls last night. I do not think that Jeremy threw this immunity challenge. I don't think there's any reason for him to. I think that he probably just, like, looked over at Ben when Ben dropped, and that made him lose his balance. And you could see, like, he stepped off, but he was not balanced when he stepped off. He stepped off and then had to take another couple of steps back because he wasn't prepared for it. And he ends up, like, hitting his foot against the back of the thing next to him. You know, if he was planning on dropping and stepping down in a controlled way, he probably would have had a bit more balance on his way down. Not to mention the fact that it just doesn't make sense for him to throw this at all.
Yeah.
You know, you could say, like, maybe he's giving it to Tony so that Tony feels comfortable switching over. But if Jeremy's safe, then Jeremy's safe. He doesn't have to worry about it at all.
100%. I mean, I think somebody in the chat said that, I mean, what is it? Jeremy had zero incentive to drop, and I agree completely. There's no reason why he should have, like, thrown this competition at all, and I don't think he did.
Yeah. So Jeremy says they will be voting for Jeremy, and had he not won the necklace, he would have been able to play in the immunity challenge. Now, I think notably, like, Tony's not necessarily saying that he's going to be voting for Jeremy. And so, again, I'm not entirely sure when this plan formed in Tony's head, but it's going to be hard to know for sure. We come back to camp, and Kim says to us she did not want Tony to win today, but winning two back to back, it's not bad. It puts a target on Tony's back. So yay for Tony. He's completely playing Jeremy, and I completely know about it. Jeremy only has Michelle at this point, so my only option is to go back to this other group, which I don't trust. It's a precarious position. It's not my favorite, but it's what I gotta do.
It's interesting to see the scrambling right when they come back in. They're figuring out who's on whose side, and also it's it kind of reminded me of what I forgot what season was it, but it was Keats, like, let's stick to the plan, you know, and everyone had a stick to the plan, but what was the plan?
I was actually thinking of Keith in this episode. I was thinking about how, like, this is an all winter season. They are all so good at this game. There are no Keiths here, like fumbling over their words, giving up the game at Tribal. They're all playing their parts so well. I also thought this is funny that, like, Kim and Denise hop over to the other side, and it's almost like Tony was like, oh, no. not if they're here. I'm going to go with the other side if they're going to be here. So Sarah talks to Kim, Sophie, Ben, and Nick, and they all agree on Jeremy. Sarah asks Denise if she's tight with Jeremy. Sarah asks Kim if Denise is tight with Jeremy. Kim says no. Sarah asks, well, should we put some votes on Michelle in case Jeremy has an idol? Kim says yes. Sarah says, okay, let's go. Let's get two votes on Michelle. You and I will write Michelle. Everyone else will write Jeremy. And Sophie tells us in confessional, I have an idol. And this was what I was like, oh, she's reminding us about her idol. That is not good news for Sophie. I have an idol in my pocket, but we have enough to split the vote. And that's good because we don't know where the other idols are in the game. And I feel like I have to say this again. I do not love this Sophie Sarah group and their vote splits. I feel like they mess up their vote splits all the time. I'm still not understanding what they were doing in the previous tribal council. And I also feel like I don't fully understand what they're doing here. If they have a solid five, if that's real, then why are they splitting the vote in this way? So they have five votes. They're getting another two from Kim and Denise. That makes it a 7-2 vote. And so they're splitting it five votes on Jeremy, two votes on Michelle. And so that if Jeremy plays an idol, it'll be a tie between Michelle and whoever the other side votes for. But why only two, first of all? And why are they trusting the two new additions, Kim and Denise, to vote differently? Mm-hmm. Because if that's the case, like, it's just like they could easily, like, they're basically telling Kim and Denise, here's where the idol could be played. And you know, if you guys decide to flip over, then you could get two votes over there. Now you know where the idol is played, and you only need one more vote to flip this whole thing around. And that's just so dangerous. Why not just put Kim and Denise both on Michelle or something along those lines? Or whatever it is. You know, it's just it's a little confusing.
Yeah, no, I definitely think they kind of overthought it. But I wonder also is that when you're talking, it's tough with vote splitting. I'll speak on it, like, from my, like, experience on these type of things, is that it seems like it's hard to get in the room by yourself. But in this side, just island-wise, you know? So I wonder if they just didn't have enough time to talk about it. And that's the first thing they kind of thought about. And they're like, you do this, and we won't come back to this, you know? Again, that still merits that somebody should, like, Sophie should have come back to, because they've already played the game. They've won their seasons. They should have come back to the board and say, I'm a little worried about this splitting. But I think it might have just been that they wanted to make a decision quickly. They didn't want to speak about it and move on from it. But it bit them back in the ass. So.
Mm-hmm. So the vote splitting was a little weird. They seem to trust Kim and Denise quite a lot, with this whole plan. Because again, like, so all they need to do is, if any of the four of, if Kim, Denise, Jeremy, or Michelle, if any of them found the idol, And you have to be extremely worried that one of them did, because nobody in the five is fessing up to having the idol. Then all Kim and Denise need to do is say, all the votes are going Jeremy. All we need to do is vote, play the idol on Jeremy, vote someone else, and boom, we've taken one of them out. Just like that. It's a dangerous, it seems very dangerous from my perspective here.
It's dangerous. I'm curious to see if any of them approached Michelle before and were like, hey, we're going to vote out Jeremy. We want you to be voting on Jeremy, you know, put your vote on here. Who knows if she would have listened, but then had that conversation, to your point, to figure out maybe she has an idol, maybe, you know, try to have I wish there was a discussion, because it just seemed like they're just like, we'll figure it ourselves. They're both screwed. And when you're on the bottom, you have nothing to lose at that point, you know?
So, I mean, ultimately, I think that we have to credit Kim and Denise here. Again, there's no way they flipped on the third day of this 3-day cycle. There's just no way that happened. There's no way that there was enough trust in Kim and Denise for this vote split if they weren't on board for days ahead of time, in my opinion. That clearly Kim and Denise had put in some major work to get in with that group. Where there is a secret scene between Kim and Sarah that we'll talk about a little bit later, where they seem to have developed a pretty tight bond. Kim is putting in some good work. I'm sure Denise is putting in good work as well. And so they really seem to have trusted Kim and Denise, and for good reason. Kim and Denise did vote with them. They did not try to flip this around, and I don't know if they would have tried if they did have an idol or knew where the idol was. So this is what we have here. Kim, Denise, and Jeremy are going to agree to vote out Ben. This is the fake plan. Denise now is telling us, I'm playing double agent. I'm actually not voting Ben. Myself and Kim are in cahoots together to blindside Jeremy. And then we get this confessional from Jeremy, where Jeremy says, at the start of the game, I liked Ben. I thought he's a good guy. That's my friend. Now everything he does annoys me. And here are the examples of things Ben does that annoy Jeremy. Everything he does annoys me. He doesn't want to work with me. Very annoying. Denise and Kim would love to see Ben go. So my preferred target is Ben.
Yeah, no, I love it. This rage Jeremy has against Ben is just like, so it must stem from somewhere else. I mean, they all had kind of that big body tactic where, like, we want the big names in here so maybe he feels like it turned on. But it's just kind of, it feels personal when Jeremy's talking about Ben. It's just like, everything about him annoys me. Everything.
I was expecting, like, especially after the Nick scene where Jeremy's like, Nick, he's so annoying. He like slides into frame all the time. And we got a whole montage. I was so ready for like a Ben list and montage. You know what? The guy doesn't want to work with me. Very annoying.
No.
Michelle is down. All five of us are in to take out Ben, says Michelle. Here we go. Ben says, this is when we get a quick quote from Ben. Crazy how quick a million goes. I feel worried for Ben. I hope he's still got some. I hope he's still got some of that million. I think Ovi is frozen. There we go. Tony says, you know, it's been a quiet afternoon. And you know what? If they want to stop or slow down, that's better for me, because I'm not stopping or slowing down. I'm always thinking when they're not. And when he says this, there's a great shot of Tony drinking from his canteen and just like giving the camera a side eye, like he's just always watching. So he says, I've been patient long enough. Now I have an opportunity to flip flop. Sophie has gotten too close to Sarah, so my target is Sophie. My real alliance is splitting the votes, which presents me with an opportunity, because I don't need that many numbers. Jeremy and Michelle don't have a choice. If I tell them a name, they have to go for it. All I need is Nick. I'm going to wait minutes before tribal to make this happen. There's a lot in here. First of all, he's completely correct. If he goes to Jeremy and Michelle, they have no choice. They tried to make this seem like, what will Jeremy do? But the thing is, if Tony is pitching this idea to Jeremy, Jeremy knows he needs Tony's vote to make the Ben plan happen. So if Tony is saying, I'm not voting Ben, I'm voting Sophie, please vote with me, Jeremy knows he has to do it. And that's why Tony can wait until the last minute to make this happen. And by waiting to the last minute, there's no possible way for Sophie to anticipate that this might be happening. So every part of this was very well thought out and very well executed. I was very impressed with this idea.
No, 100%. Yeah, this is my one complaint about this episode. I really wish they didn't put it like Jeremy, because Jeremy has to go with him no matter what. If Tony says, you know, because it's dependent on Tony. The person this plan is also mainly dependent on is on Nick. And I really wish they kind of showed a little bit more on, like, because I truly don't believe it was just a Nick saying, I'll go with the flow, you know, because this was a decision he had to make that would change the trajectory of his game either way, you know, this, because this is them making a break from it, especially earlier than some people would have thought. So I really wish it kind of showed a little bit more of his thought process instead of showing Nick this, like, yeah, I'll go for it. You know, I think he deserved more than that. So I think there was some cool strategy that we missed out, kind of weighing the pros and cons, kind of like how a Yule and Penner did it. You know, if we do this, we do that, you know. It was cool to see how it worked out. And Tony masterfully said that I'm going to wait before tribal or like a few minutes beforehand to make this all happen.
Yes. So the scene we get with Nick is Tony tells Nick, tonight is a great opportunity because I have the necklace. And I was just like, is that a great opportunity for Nick, though? Like, great that you're safe, Tony. I don't know why this is a selling point to Nick. But he says, but I have the necklace. He goes and he says that we're going to tell them me and Nick are going to save you. So you're going to owe us. So would you be willing to make that move, Nick? And I think very notably here, Nick goes, it's tough. And then there's a very clear cut. He's like,
yeah,
I'll do it. And Tony's like, oh, great.
Exactly. It just makes it look comical, like Nick's going through. And of course, I'm biased towards Nick, but I know there was a lot more thought. And to your point, like, what's in it for Nick at this point? We don't know as a viewers, and we're convinced that, like, Nick's just going with the flow, you know? And I think Tony had to do some sort of pitch to explain to him, and Nick had to kind of weigh his pros and cons. If we just got a confessional from Nick saying, like, you know what? I think this might be the time to make a move like that. That would have made me happy.
So if you had to guess, Ovi, what would your guess be for Nick's motivations here? What is running through Nick's head?
He's trying to figure out. So right now, you know, he's in that five of people, but he's probably not much closer to each person has a duo, you know? And I don't really know Nick's and Ben's relationship, but they didn't really show much of it on there. So that would be the one person you would think that they would be connected with. But he also has some sort of feelings with Michelle. You know, there's that connection from before him, Michelle, Wendell. They were that four with Yule. So I think he probably feels better to go with Jeremy and Michelle over some of these other folks. And I think the other thing was he probably doesn't have a connection, strong connection with Sophie. So getting her out at that point of the game doesn't hurt his game because they didn't have a connection as much. So I think it was kind of thrown to that way. And I really do wonder if when Tony won those tokens, did he give Nick back a token? Or who did he give those two tokens back? And that might have been a true trust. But like, Tony gave me back a token. He wants me to do this. That's a strong four. Maybe we could do things. And also, I'm rambling on about this, but Nick is not seen as a mastermind of this flip. You know, the pressure is on Tony. So Nick gets to do a strong move on his resume, get Sophie, who isn't somebody who's on his side, and maybe he can move forward with the strong four.
Yeah, I think the only explanation the episodes have tried to give us is that a couple of episodes ago, during the Adam vote off, we had a confessional from Nick where he talked about chaos, and how the more chaos there is in the game, the better for me, because I can navigate that, and we can break people up around what's happening with that chaos. And I talked about this, like, this is a Big Brother strategy, and I love that Nick brings the Big Brother strategy into the game. And so I wonder if that was the episode's attempt at explaining why, like, you know, future motivation for this move, if that was part of his motivation here, you know, because as you said, he's yes a part of this five, but if he runs to the end with this five, does he really have a chance of winning? You know, you have Ben, Sophie, and Sarah as they're really tight. They were on the Yara tribe together. Then you have Tony, who's super tight with Sarah. And then you have Nick, who's like been brought in by Tony, seemingly. So he doesn't really have a place, seemingly, in this group of five to get to the final three in the first place. And then even if he does, the other people were running that alliance, right? So how does he make a claim to win this game? And I think he's going to have a hard time making a claim to the jury at all anyway, because he's the newest winner. He's one of the youngest guys out there. He does not have a family. Nick has to play an insane game, I think, to win a jury vote. So when presented with an opportunity like this, I think, of course, you have to take this. You have to hope that probably that Tony either pisses people off so bad that there's a bitter jury, or that Tony ends up leaving somehow, or you can take him out and then you can take some credit for this move. Ultimately, we likely will not know what Nick was thinking in this moment until after the season.
No, I think I really wish they put some more like edits for him to talk about it more. But yeah, no, I think every player at this point is starting to think, you know, I don't like saying pad your resume, but you need to have moments in the game where you specifically shifted the game to deserve a win, you know, because you're going against other winners. And as you look at the players around you, if you realize that I haven't shifted the game to not just shift the game and put chaos, but to make it positive for me, and bring in the chaos and shift the game. It might be tough, like you said, to, you know, make an argument for yourself at the end, because these people aren't just going to simply give the win out. And I think that definitely played in Nick's head too.
Yeah. So, Tony says to us, our four will be stronger than their three and their two. I will be golden if I can pull this off. And so he goes and he talks to Jeremy. And this is a great scene where Tony goes to Jeremy. He says, Kim and Denise are not with you. But he can barely finish the sentence. Why not? Why not? So Kim and Sarah are going for Michelle. Everyone else is supposed to go to you. I'm taking me and Nick away from those numbers and giving them to you. Us four vote Sophie and she goes. And he's, why? Why? Because they were going to blindside you. Who's they? Everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody. And this is such a great scene because, you know, first of all, it's right before Tribal. They're switching this up. This is the scene. We're seeing it happen. And also because it's so weird for me seeing Jeremy so vulnerable in this spot. Like, I've never seen Jeremy like this before, where like he's been blindsided out of the game before. And he's just like, oh, these idiots. He's been on the wrong side of a vote earlier in this season. He was like, oh, damn it. But I've never seen Jeremy just like on the bottom like this, trying to gain some traction. And then out of nowhere, Tony's going to blindside him with this plan. And he's just like, he can't even tell what direction is up right now. And we know Jeremy wants to be driving the car. He told us this a few episodes ago. And just when he feels like he's maybe getting some traction, Tony comes in and he says, no, Jeremy, get in the back seat and let me drive. And Jeremy, as we pointed out, literally has no choice. And so Jeremy tells us, I didn't want to do anything different. I wanted Ben gone. Tony told me that Kim and Denise are not with me. And my first thought was, you're wrong. I really don't know if people are coming after me. I just don't know. And seeing Jeremy like this is so crazy. Such a like calm and like a collected guy. And like, this is what the season is doing to these players. They are all so good and they're all throwing each other off balance. And it's so fun to see.
Oh yeah. 100%. I mean, put these winners, and we've seen it before, put winners on a normal season of things. They're able to walk through a lot of players because same experience. Can you hear me, Taryn? They cut out.
Yeah, we're just cutting out a little bit here and there.
Okay, sorry. But each of these players have the same experience, so they're able to play at such a high level. So to your point, like seeing Jeremy panic and not sure what to do, especially when he's really adamant about the strategy where he wants bigger players around him, his meat shield strategy, and he kind of has trouble adapting to figure out how to move from there. It was cool, and I think it spoke a lot too of like Tony knowing that the only way to make Jeremy follow this plan was to get him in that corner the last few minutes. Like, this is what I'm going to do. This is how it's going to be. Nick is with me. It's going to happen. And we saw that frustration with Tony a little bit, that he planned everything from, you know, all of this, and the one person he's trying to save to make his whole move work is Jeremy, but Jeremy might not listen just for a second. You know, we see that frustration seek out of Tony. I like to see, you know, I think emotions that we don't see in players regularly.
Yeah, and Tony's just like, can you please trust me and believe me? I can't sit here too long because they'll know I'm trying to blow them up. Please believe me. And Jeremy says, did you already talk to Michelle? He's, no, you have to go talk to her. It's like, oh my God. Because now it's like he has to convince Michelle to do this thing. And if Tony's playing him, then he just screwed Michelle over too. Like, and he's like, tell her last minute, vote Sophie. Trust me. Tony says to us, Jeremy's reluctant. I'm begging him to save him.
Yeah.
Which is a great line.
Oh, it's great. And I don't think we did, but we didn't get to see Jeremy talk to Michelle, right? It just went straight to tribal after that, right? Okay.
Yep.
That would have been interesting. I'm curious to see if Michelle was like, yeah, I think we need to do this. Or if they even just thought about talking to Denise or Kim, trying to be like, hey, is this really what's going on? Because that's what I was worried about. This might blow back into Tony's face. And then they'd be like, oh, wait, we need to put it back together. So
I'm sure that like they, because they're both smart players, I'm sure they both thought through it. And they came to the same conclusion. Like, look, either Tony's with us and we vote this way and it works, or he's not with us and we vote this way and it wouldn't have worked anyway, that we would have been out anyway. So we have to just go with it. Great job, both of them. Jeremy looks sad, all tribal. I'm sure he didn't have to work too hard to look sad, all tribal. Michelle gives nothing away. No Keith nails here. No sticking with the plan. There's talk of building your resume. And I thought this was a great conversation at tribal here, that Jeff asks, are there moves you don't want credit for? And Nick actually replies, like, it's kind of a paradox that, you know, if you take credit for these big moves, then you become a bigger target in the game. But if you do take credit for the moves, you become a bigger target in the game. If you don't take credit for the moves, then you might not win in the end because people don't think that you've done enough. And it's great that we hear this from Nick, considering the situation right now as well, where like Nick very much was a part of this move, but likely will not take as much credit as Tony. And it'll be very interesting to see how Nick plays this out moving forward.
Oh, most definitely. And I love these type of conversation when Probst like top asks these questions and we get to see him, because it's such a meta conversation, you know, we're talking about how the game is played, like, and we're making these moves. It's a game within itself, you know, it's not just eliminating each other, but it's a game about getting to the end and how can you defend yourself? How can you convey the moves that you did to the jury of people who've already played the game before? So there's so many moving parts, and I love that they do talk about. Some would say you want to pad that resume, like you should go for it. But people who feel like on the defensive at that moment, like I think it was Sophie, because like, why would you make a strong like a move right now to get out of Jeremy? Let's not talk about padding your resume. And she kind of threw out all these lists of things. Like they both made good arguments about it. So I think it's a conversation we really haven't seen specifically. I could be wrong within the Survivor part talking about like, well, you're making a move just to make a move. Like that's just not it. So yeah. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, Sophie says, yeah, this is all great, but nobody wants a resume that's super long. Like, but doesn't have quality to it. You don't want to be that annoying girl at school that's like Girl Scouts and debate and mathletes and volunteers after school. It's just very obvious that you're padding your resume for no reason. I feel like Sophie always has these great school metaphors. She's always bringing it back to the school people.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I feel like everybody knows that one person.
Yeah,
who's in all those things. Were you that person, Ovi?
No, I didn't have enough time. I spent a little too much time playing video games too. Mm. I did a few other things, try to pad the resume, but I could definitely tell you during my big brother time, I didn't really have much chance to pad the resume. So I would have taken a chance if I had a chance.
In high school, I helped found a pizza club.
For my
resume for college, for my college application. I was in a club. It's called the Pizza Club.
Pizza Club.
We went out and got pizza.
That says great as a club as there could ever be. I would have loved to join that.
See, now that's padding your resume for a good reason.
That is. I bet if we tweeted Sophie and asked her whether she would have thought that was, I think she'd say that's acceptable.
Yeah,
that's acceptable.
So Jeremy says it's also about timing. You can't beat anyone at the end if you don't get to the end. And so Jeremy knew that if he didn't play that advantage, he'd be sitting in Tyson's seat right now. This is great from Jeremy. I love that he's explaining himself in front of the jury. We did hear from the jury like, oh, he's abandoning his crew. Now that came from Wendell, and Jeremy really screwed over Wendell. So maybe a biased sample there. But still. Good that he's explaining it to the jury, framing this in a way that is not I abandoned my people, but I made a smart move because I wouldn't be sitting here if I didn't make that move. And so then they talk about it was a quiet afternoon. And then it's time for the vote. They go and they vote. And then as Jeff is reading the votes, Jeremy is just staring Ben down. And we've seen him do this to Nick during the immunity challenge. Jeremy just loves the stare move. He loves just Jeremy.
Sorry.
Jeremy. Ben's just like, what do you want from me? Go ahead.
I don't know. I just love it because I think that's what Bane hates about Jeremy as much, or just it rubs him the wrong way. Because in his season, you don't have as many people to do it like. Just go straight up against him like that. And Jeremy was just doing that. Like they don't care. They're all winners, you know? And I love that.
Yes. And so I'm super stressed at this point because it's either Sophie or Jeremy. And I have a pretty good feeling it's going to be Sophie, which is super exciting, but also super sad because I love Sophie. And here come the votes. Sophie, 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 Sophie. She goes, no! Oh, idol in my pocket! Oh, she's like stumbling. Oh, I don't even know how do I do this? I've never done this before. No. Ben is shocked. Go ahead.
And Jeremy's still staring down Ben. That's the thing. Jeremy is still looking like Sophie's getting up. I don't want my pocket. Jeremy goes.
Who's the biggest threat now, Ben?
And he goes. Like, he's like, you did it. And it's so funny. If somebody could just tag us, like, I just want that clip. Of Jeremy, like just straight out, just looking at Ben, and then when Jeremy's still looking at Ben. I love it.
Oh, I mean, and it's also a great callback to the first tribal where Jeremy's looking at Ben like, "Am I in trouble? Like, what's going on?" And Ben's like, yeah. "I don't know." And then they blindside Jeremy. So Sophie says, "Good job, guys! I did not see it coming." I can take the idol out of my crotch now. Ben just goes. Boom. Sophie heads over to the bequeathing station and she's still in she looks at the board with the fire token. She's just like, okay, so she counts. Four votes. Yeah. She's like counting like who screwed me? Who can I get these fire tokens to? So she ends up bequeathing to Sarah bequeathing. And Kim. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're building up their tokens now. I think that moment, it really hurt. Like, and also, I said in the beginning, I didn't get to see Sophie's season as much, or I didn't finish it all the way. But absolutely loved her through the season. And it was kind of like a gut shot, like, she didn't expect it at all. And I think when she goes on the island, you have that little clip and she's just like, this is how it feels. Like, I've never been blindsided. Like, you just feel for her. And yeah. Especially Idol in the Pop. Idol in the Pop. That hurts.
Yeah, we get the next time segment, which I don't usually talk too much about, but there's such a great clip. Kim just says, I have to get Tony. And she's just like staring and there's like her eye twitches. She's like, I have to get him. It's like, oh, I'm so pumped. Intense. I'm so pumped for Kim versus Tony. And so Sophie heads to the... Yes, sorry, you're cut off a bit. Sophie heads to the edge. She says, I've never been blindsided before. It is a traumatic experience. I played the best that I could. It's a bummer to go out with an idol in my pocket. She walks over to the people on the edge. She's like, I'm sad, guys. She's like, she's almost crying. I feel so bad for her. She says to us the final words. She came into this game feeling like she was a bottom tier winner, and it's been fun realizing that she can hold her own. Obviously calling out the stock watch, the legacy watch, that we do here on this podcast and we'll be talking about very soon. I will say, in the first vote for the legacy watch, Sophie was a middle tier winner. Not a bottom tier winner. But since then, since the first episode, she has been in the top tier and she has never faltered from the top tier. Sophie, you're a top tier winner. The Legacy Watch says so.
Yes, you're not a bottom tier whatsoever. If there's one thing we can take away from this episode, this was such a chaotic episode and Tony really just handled it so well. From what I saw, and of course there's a lot we're missing, but Sophie had no indication the shot was coming at her. And I think Tony also planned. He needed to make sure it'd be somebody who had no idea the shot would be coming at them. He masterfully did it. And I mean, here's the thing. If Tony doesn't take a shot at Sophie right now, I can see Sophie go so far in this game. You know, she could have been right there. And that's what hurts so much. She had an idol, great positioning in the game with connection-wise, and wasn't that big threat. And it was crazy that Tony was the one person to see that. Like, he needs to take her out. Because he needs Sarah to be closer to him. Because I don't think anybody else on there takes a shot at Sophie till way later on.
Yeah, Tony is just this kind of player. He does the thing that nobody sees coming. That's who Tony is, and that's why it was so hard for him to get here in the first place, because he has that reputation, and he just demolished this structure that likely would have led to Sophie finding a lot of success. I mean, she's in there with Nick and Ben and Sarah. Sarah might have a good chance to beat Sophie in a jury vote, although I think Sophie is very well spoken. But if Sophie manages to get Ben and Nick there, I think she probably wins that one. And like, just her chances of winning this game were pretty good. Even just like one vote after this, if she probably would have had enough control. But who knows? Who knows? It's always hard to see, especially because, we saw so little of Sophie. I really feel like the edit was editing Sophie in a very particular way, where we needed to know that she was a threat in the game. She was playing a very respectable game, but at the same time, we couldn't be so invested in her that we were mad at Tony for doing this. So we heard very little from her in the last few episodes, I think, so that we would feel a little more mixed about her leaving than like just super, super sad about it. So that's that. All right. So secret scenes we got just a couple of them. This scene between Sarah and Kim, I really recommend you watch this on CBS All Access. I think they might also post it to the YouTube channel as well. That Kim says, Sarah, you're playing a hell of a game. Sarah says, no, I'm not. Sarah says, I wanted to play a game that's not personal, and it turned personal. Sarah is basically concerned that after her first season, people just called her a bad person. She was unemotional, and they really ragged on her for the game that she played and all of that. And she got a lot of hate, and she feels like, she might be along the same trajectory right now, and she doesn't like that. But Kim says, look, we both have PTSD from our experience. I got the same thing. We're both good people. I promise you, don't be so hard on yourself. And Kim says to us in confessional, he says, I came in not trusting Sarah, but as moms, we've really started developing a friendship. And she had a really traumatic experience when she won. People made her feel like a bad person, but she's not. She's a good person. She's a wonderful person. They're all good people out here. And I hope that's not lost. And Sarah says to us that Kim really freed her up to be able to continue to play hard in this game because she was really, really getting bogged down in all of this stuff. And I think this scene is so important to humanize these people. Sarah does get a lot of hate for especially her game, which I think largely because of the way that was edited. But a lot of these players will often get hate. And I think there are a lot of Kim stans that hate Sarah. And listen to Kim, guys. She knows what she's talking about. She has firsthand experience with Sarah. This is a nice scene.
Yeah. No, I don't want to go too over everything, but I'm really glad you brought this up because I think we're getting the viewership of this season two is going great, but I also think so many people, are stuck home and they're online and they might be talking about the season a little bit more than other ones. And I'm just seeing a lot of negativity thrown at some of these players, like these were personal moves against people. These players are playing for $2 million. It's within the context of the game. And, I've met a lot of these players. They're great people. They're great people outside of the game, even inside. So, send them some positivity and understand that, the moves made within this TV show are within there. They're not bad people outside of it, even regardless of how the edit might show them. And I think a lot of the chat, they understand that. And we're probably preaching to the choir right here, but it does. It really saddens me to see, these players who love this game, who went out there to entertain, really getting just so much hate thrown at them for reasons that they shouldn't.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm so impressed with both of these women. Kim and Sarah both have played excellent games so far. I've talked about it over the course of the season with Sarah, but I think really proving just how strong her win was in Game Changers and really doing so well out here. If not for Tony, I think that Sarah might be in an even better position than Sophie was, really positioned to potentially win this game. Now with what Tony's done, perhaps not. We'll have to wait and see. But she's really proven herself to be an excellent social player. She is not, Kim is not kidding. A lot of people came into this game planning to target Sarah, not trusting Sarah, and Sarah turned them all around on her, which is very, very impressive. And of course, Kim, having gotten here, so impressed with the read on Tony, with getting back in, making this bond with Sarah, being trusted enough to split the vote with this group, continuing to now understand that Tony needs to go, being the person that's like, we can't let this guy get to the end. He is the biggest threat. I'm loving what I'm seeing from Kim. I feel like they've both really solidified just how good they are at this game. And this was a really nice scene. So another secret scene. We go to the edge. There's more yoga. And it's a Yule scene. Yule says he really struggled about pulling the flag when he got there. But he didn't want his kids to think he was a quitter. So he's so glad he stuck it out. Seeing his girls out on the island was amazing for him. And he wants to do more things with his wife, like date night. And you know what? She's been trying to get me to do yoga, and it took me being stuck on an island to try it out. And he's talking to Parvati, and they were on, Cook Islands together. And Parvati's like, that you get stuck in everyday life, and you end up not having an intentional day. And Yule tells us, I've been taking my life for granted. I'm so lucky and blessed, and I didn't think I'd come out here and have any major revelations about my life. But you know what? I was wrong. Cool personal content from Yule.
I I'll always take it.
Yeah. Then we got this stuff from Jeff in the recap. Jeff says maybe we should have just called this episode Tony's episode. He says the extortion advantage was meant to emulate capitalism, which I thought was hilarious.
Of course he said that.
He says Tony reading the note is one of his favorite moments of the season. Probst thinks that Tony made a good move here because Sophie is really good at this game. He also in the Dalton Ross interview had some good stuff here. You can tell that Probst definitely was expecting some blowback for featuring Tony so prominently in the episode. But he was like, look, we did what we had to do here, guys. I understand. I know you don't like it when we feature one person too much. But you look at the episode. He had a good quote here that I thought was really insightful into the process. He says, we always start at the end and work backwards. We start with who is voted out. Then we identify the players responsible for the vote out. Then we look at the impact the immunity challenge may have had, etc. We continue this process all the way back to the tribes returning to camp from the previous tribal and how the fallout of that vote may impact the next vote. That's our process. And so I thought that was interesting that that's how they structure the editing of each episode.
Yeah, no, I didn't. That's cool that he talked. I didn't get to see that scene, so that's all. I think they've been a lot more open about how they structure things in the, you know, these last few years, and it's just cool for him to just talk about it.
Yes. Jeff also says Sophie's one of his favorite winners because of her stealth mode. which I thought was interesting. He also had a nice quote here that I thought was nice. He said, with every passing season, I gain more respect for the player. Those who have played, I have learned so much from them about the courage to live a life on your own terms and not someone else's. When someone agrees to play Survivor, it tells me they are yearning for an adventure and they are confident enough in themselves to take it on with no idea where it will lead and what they will learn about themselves. I really feel like I thought it was great that you could tell how much respect Jeff has for these winners, that they keep expecting him to mess with them. Like he's doing a toast at the beginning of the season. He's letting them have the family visit. They keep expecting something bad to happen. But he really wanted to celebrate these people because he really does respect them for making the show what it is.
Yeah, no, I love that. You know, it's because it's a two way street. Like, the show wouldn't be where it's at without Jeff and vice versa without these players who did so credible on their season and now have been entertaining all of us back here at home. So, like, it's a two-way street. I love franchises that respect both the players and the players respect the people who are in charge of it. So I think this was really awesome.
Yes. All right. So then finally he confirmed that he said if Jeremy had left tribal in the previous tribal when Jeremy was able to leave safety without power, Jeremy leaving tribal would not have nullified Sarah's steal a vote. If Sarah had played the steal a vote on Jeremy and then Jeremy left, Jeff would have said, OK, you can no longer play it on Jeremy. Who do you want to play it on now? So I thought that was an interesting little tidbit there. But that's it for the episode and the extra content. Ovi, it's time to talk about the Legacy Watch before we wrap this podcast up. The Legacy Watch is where we track week to week the legacy of these winners and how it changes based on the tiers they are put in. So this is what we have from the previous week where these winners were ranked. Now, I saw some people in the chat say they want me to start at the bottom this time. So I'm willing to do that if that's where people want me to start. We can let me know if you like this after the fact, if you want me to continue to start at the bottom of the list or if you'd rather me start at the top. We can do it either way. I don't mind. So here's the Legacy Watch. We'll start at the bottom. Okay. And at the bottom here we have the bottom tier: Ben, Amber, and Danny. Now, interestingly, Amber and Danny have sometimes changed positions, and in this particular instance, for some reason, they did. Danny has, for some reason, surpassed Amber. I don't know why. In the bottom tier, and then we've had Ben. So Ben started at the bottom of the bottom tier, and week by week has slowly been climbing his way up, and he came very close last week. He was very close to hitting that middle tier. He's steps away from it. But in this episode, he fell back, like halfway back. Like he lost 5 weeks of progress.
Oh, and no.
He is far back down far away from the middle tier. Something happened here with Ben to make him fall far back down. I have to imagine that it's something that I talked about before, which is that something that really dramatically influences this legacy watch, from what I've observed, is when players talk about other players. And so when we get a scene of Jeremy saying, "Everything Ben does annoys me," I was like, this is going to be bad for Ben. And you know what? It was. He fell dramatically.
Wow.
And I think it has to do with this scene where with Jeremy talking about being annoyed by Ben. I can tell you that Christina, who I'm giving all this data to, actually has extensive notes about the confessionals and who they're talking about and whether it's positive or negative. So she actually plans to do an analysis based on this, and I'm really interested in what she comes up with once we get all this data in. But this really hurt. This one confessional from Jeremy seemingly really hurt Ben. Now, also, there was that scene with the confrontation between Ben and Jeremy as well, and I'm sure that didn't help Ben either. But we definitely have noticed that these confessionals really make a difference when somebody talks either positively or negatively, I think, about another player.
Okay. This is interesting. Right. So, quick question. This is just for me, because I think this is the first time I've seen it this season. Sorry, I wasn't keeping track with this specifically. But is it left to right? Is there a order to, like, so I see the tiers on the screen, but is there, is it left the worst of that, like,
left is the top of the list, and right is the bottom of the list in within the tiers.
Within the tiers. So right now, Ben is the top of the bottom tier.
Yes.
We're seeing. Okay. Gotcha. Just wanted to clarify.
All right. So then we head into the middle tier. And in the middle tier, last week we had Adam, Wendell, and Nick at the bottom of the middle tier. And they were very, very close with one another. This episode, we saw that Adam actually fell a bit, and he is now at the bottom of the middle tier. Nick and Wendell both had very small increases, but that leaves them both about where they were before, and that means that it's going to be Adam, Nick, and Wendell. I really feel like Nick continues to be underestimated in the Legacy Watch, at so low a position here in the middle tier, given the game that he's playing, which seems to be pretty good, although, you know, it's hard to say that this is wrong, because unfortunately we can't see it.
But I think it, you know, I'm biased, of course. I would put him much higher than that in this set of the game where we're at right now, but we have to be able to see it. So hopefully it can rise. If he keeps continuing to do better, he can be an underrated player. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of players that have received negative confessionals about them, there was that whole segment about everything Nick does bothers me.
Yeah.
We got that whole montage, and that Nick has not done well since then.
Jeremy's tanking everyone.
Jeremy knows what he's doing. So after Wendell is Michelle, who saw basically no movement here. And then after Michelle is still Ethan, who also saw very little movement. And then Natalie, still at the top of the middle tier. She actually had a big bump this episode, finding that clue, getting 6 tokens. Notably, though, from my perspective, this was told. So, the last two advantages found on Extinction, Danny and Parvati, Natalie and Parvati, both of them were narrated via Parvati. Natalie got, I believe, didn't really have much in the way of confessionals talking about this. It was really narrated all the way through Parvati, but Natalie did get a big boost from it regardless.
Got it. That's interesting.
Natalie actually very close to cracking the top tier with that boost, I will say.
Okay. I'm not surprised with those 60. I'm curious to see if she didn't get those 6 tokens from Tony, would it have been as much of a boost? So.
All right. So after that, we come back up to the top tier. And in the top tier, we had Denise at the bottom of the top tier, and that is where she stays. Now, Denise started all the way back before the season started, she was in the middle tier, and stayed about in the middle tier until she dethroned Sandra, when she shot way up into the top tier. But since then, Denise has been lying low, and consistently, episode after episode, she is having moderate drops in her standing in the legacy tier, to the point where she is now just barely on the edge of the top tier, in extreme danger of falling down into the middle tier here for Denise. If she falls next week by the same amount she fell this week, she will be firmly into the middle tier. In fact, she'll be below Natalie if she falls the same amount next week she did this week. So she is barely holding on. I will say, I think she should not be dropping. She made that incredible move, and she's doing the right thing by laying low.
Yeah, Denise had such a big target on her after the move she made, and she's been able to kind of, you know, shuffle back into everything. And I wonder, too, after this whole vote, we might see Denise be off the radar off a lot of people, because she has a lot of movement now. It's very, I don't know what the right word, movable alliances now. So she can kind of weave her way. I think we might see it rise.
Yeah, and like, I feel like people are starting to forget that she really just shanked Sandra. And if they forget about it long enough and she makes it all the way to the end, she can absolutely bring that up and be like, I made that insane move, then I lied low afterward, and you guys forgot about it. You dummies.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So after Denise, or I should say before Denise, we have Sarah still there in the same spot. She dropped just a smidge. But really just stays about where she is. This was definitely not a great episode for Sarah in terms of what happened in the game, but I do think it further confirmed to me just how good she is. But she is going to stick around here at the bottom here. I do think this is underrated here for Sarah. I think she deserves a higher spot personally.
I would agree. I think so.
All right. So before Sarah here in the top tier, we have Sophie, who has fallen from the top of the top tier behind Yule, Jeremy, and Tyson. She has fallen that she is just above Sarah now in the top tier, but she has not fallen out of the top tier. Sophie remains in the top tier. Okay. She did fall a bit here, though.
Huh. When somebody rises up, does it have to replace them? Is the lowest the person on the middle? So if someone, say if Natalie goes up the top tier, would Denise fall in the middle tier? Or
no, it's all point based. So anybody within the point range gets to be in that tier.
Got it. Okay. I see.
Yes. I think this is correct. I think Sophie absolutely had a great showing this season. And I think most importantly, in terms of like where she is ranked here, proved how good she was in South Pacific. I talked about her game prior to the season starting as kind of like Derek Levasseur in Big Brother 16, where basically she was in control of a situation that was really good for her, and she just kept it there the entire time. And didn't really have a reason to deviate from it. And so we never saw what happens if something goes wrong for Sophie, because she was able to keep this great spot for herself the entire time. And so, like, I was very curious to see, like, is she good enough to deal with a game where she has to adapt a little more and things go wrong for her more often? And I think we absolutely saw that happen here. She did such a great job in a season of all winners. She was in a power position. They were all so impressed with her game, and she was, I think she came decently close to having a good chance to win this whole thing. And I absolutely think she deserves to be in the top tier myself.
Yeah, I mean, no, I would agree with that. And I always feel like, you know, when you're voted out, it's tough, maybe you do fall out. But if we look at the way your tiers are stacked too, we saw see that Tony was the main person who orchestrated this. You know, he was the legend tier. So you're getting somebody from the top of your tiers trying to take out Sophie. I don't think that it diminishes her game at all, because if it wasn't for Tony, she would be going by bright with a idol in her pocket. So I think she deserves, when I'm looking at this tiers, I think she's stuck there. It's good.
Yes. All right. So after Sophie, we do have Tyson, who obviously experienced a bit of a drop last episode for being voted out. He bounced back just slightly. I think people kind of went a bit down on him and then kind of bounced, normalized a little bit. So he is now here just above or just below Jeremy, who is right above Tyson. Very close vote between the two of them. And then above Jeremy, we have Yule at the top of the top tier. None of them moved in any considerable fashion at this point. I think all of these players are absolutely top tier players. And you know, the sorting between them still, you know, whatever. But I've been very impressed with Jeremy. I don't know what will happen with Jeremy with the rest of the season, but I love the fact that he's still in here, and I'm very impressed with what he's doing.
Yeah, no, it's been impressive how his scrambling has worked. I think this episode, though, I don't know. Do you think this episode helped Jeremy or hurt Jeremy in the ranking wise, from your opinion?
I mean, ultimately, he's about the same from where he was before. Okay. So I think that you know, what we saw was he had a bad read on Tony, but it turned into a good read on Tony.
Good read. Yeah,
he was in a bad spot that turned into a good spot, but it was Tony's doing and not his doing. So ultimately, I think it could just kind of end up as a wash.
Okay. Yeah.
So we head into the top tier. The legend tier. And here in the legend tier, we have Sandra still here hanging out at the bottom. But very, very close to Kim. They're actually tied here at the bottom of the legend tier. Kim and Tony, recent additions to the legend tier. Kim started there but fell out and came back in, and so now she is tied with Sandra at the bottom of the legend tier. And so I think Kim should be cemented in the legend tier at this point. I don't think she should fall out.
No, I mean, I think she's played a great game as is, and I think the cool is she just has such an intimidating factor with her. She's able to, you know, to see through a lot of BS, and I'm so excited, like you said before, to see the rest of the season how she's going to be against Tony. She's like, I need to get Tony out, and I can't wait to see it. So, I think she deserves to be there for sure.
All right, so then right before Kim, in the number three spot, is Boston Rob, who has fallen below Tony. Boston Rob in the number three spot. He didn't move down. It's that Tony moved up. And so there's Boston Rob there in the number three spot, which leaves the top two, Parvati and Tony. But in what order? What order, Ovi? It's Parvati has been holding this number one spot for a long time. But Tony just had a great episode.
If there's any episode you're going to rank Tony that top one of the legend tier, I think it's got to be this episode. I that's just my opinion, but it's going to be close. There's a lot of Parvati fans out there, I know for sure. But Tony just did a masterclass. So let us know, Taryn.
I can tell you, it is very close. It is very, very close.
We need a drum roll.
But Parvati is going to hold the number one spot just barely. Tony is in number two. I think Tony could have made this happen in the number one spot had Parvati not been involved in the advantage find, because Parvati actually saw a 7-point bump, which was just enough. She was ahead of Tony by 3 points. So that bump was just enough to keep her in the number one spot above Tony in this legacy watch. So here it is for now. It's Parvati, Tony, Boston Rob, Kim, Sandra in the legendary tier. And there you go. Tony, I think, has to have cemented his spot at this point. He is very firmly in the legend tier here.
Oh, yeah. 100%. If this is the episode, I think it's going to go down in history where people are like, if you need to convince somebody to watch an episode, you know, this is a good episode to show them.
Yes. So there it is. There's the legacy watch. What an exciting legacy watch this week. I'm so interested to see where this goes. But there it is. Ovi, thank you so much for joining me tonight. What a fun episode to talk about.
Oh, this was a blast. Thank you so much, Sharon, to have it. When you asked me if I would be interested in doing this one, I was like, which episode? You're like, this episode right now. I was like, great. I would love to talk about this because this was super cool. So thanks for having me on. If people know me, they know I've been a fan of this man right here. So being his guest is an honor. I love Taryn. I love RHAP. Y'all do a wonderful job. And the fans are great here. They do a lot for y'all. So, yeah, can't wait. Have me on anytime you want me to. And I'm excited to watch the rest of your commentary on the rest of the season, Taryn.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you guys for joining us this week. I will, of course, be back next week to talk about whatever happens. It looks like it's Kim versus Tony, and I'm pretty pumped about that. So we'll be back. We're going to talk through everything that happens there. We're going to update the Legacy Watch. It's going to be great. So make sure you tune in then. Of course, if you never watched these on YouTube, make sure you check them out once in a while. You can see the Legacy Watch, not physically, but visually. That might help if you don't see the visual. I don't know. Let me tell you this. I am a reader that does not visualize what I'm reading. If you are a podcast listener that does not visualize what you're hearing, then a YouTube video might help you with the Legacy Watch. That's what we have going on there. Ovi, where can people find you if they want to check you out?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at The Ovi Kabir, Instagram at Ovi Kabir, and if you have a Facebook, I got a Facebook page. Just type in Ovi Kabir, and you should see my face on there. So there's not many people with my name that look like me on there. So that's a blessing in disguise.
Can they book your face on there?
Yeah. I mean, just send me a message.
That Cameo?
You need a happy birthday message right now. You know, you can do Cameo, but I try. If you send me a message on like Instagram, you need a birthday or something like that. I just did a proposal for somebody. I don't know why anybody would want me to do a proposal for their fiance, but I was honored.
There you go. All right. Yeah. Thank you guys so much. You can find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taryn. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. I have also gotten into Friday at noon Eastern on Twitch. I will talk a little bit more about Survivor, in particular about the edit. And I don't really do edgic, but I do just kind of talk about my feelings on the edit. And we talk about that a little more. If you care about that sort of thing, you can find me on Twitch noon Eastern on Friday for that. And there we go. That's it for this week. So thank you once more for joining us, Ovi.
Oh, and I always wanted this. So if you're not subscribed yet to Rob Has a Podcast, smash that subscribe button, hit that like button, help Taryn and the amazing group of people here out, and have a wonderful day.
Great. And you know what? If you are not a patron of Rob Has a Podcast,
oh, be a patron.
Make sure you sign up as a patron. Rob is doing some great stuff, donating some money to the situation going on right now to help relieve that situation. So you can check that out from what Rob is doing. Make sure you check out the Patreon link from the robhasawebsite.com website thing. And that's what we have for you. So thank you. Thank you again for joining us. And we will see you next time.
Yeah, Taryn's back. To give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Taryn's update for Survivor.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.